It's that time on the radio where we're joined by Bill Blevinson, Blevins Franks. Hi there, Bill.
Hi, Howard. How are you?
I'm very well. It's nice to talk to you, as
Good.
Always. Now, we're going to look at choosing investments today. The other week, if you remember, we did interest rates and talked about what people should do if they keep much of their savings in cash and how they should invest it, how should they go about choosing what to invest in. So can we look at this again today?
Sure. I mean, I think that we covered, I think, just a week back or so, the idea that holding cash on deposit in the hope that you're going to benefit from interest rate increases is probably chasing fool's gold, because I don't think interest rate increases are going to significantly increase the rate of return on cash on deposit.
Yeah.
And indeed, you know, with inflation running at 3%, even if you were to get 2%, which is probably four times more than you can get now, you're still going to be losing capital at the rate of 1% per annum, which is not a good idea.
No. So I suppose that the choice is between shares and bonds. Can you explain what the difference is between them and what role do they play in your portfolio?
Yeah, well, I think if you're not a seasoned investor, it's understandable that you might not appreciate the varying levels of investment choices that you can make and the degree of risk that each involves. I mean, first of all, is cash a sound investment? Well, in most solid institutions, it's a sound investment, and you won't actually see the notional value of your capital reduce. If you've got 100,000 in the bank and you earn 0.5%, you'll have 100,500 next year, and that is pretty stable. However, as I say, with inflation going on at 3%, you're really actually losing your spending power. So the alternatives that you mention of shares and bonds can often concern the cash investor, because they're not certain that they have perhaps the tolerance to investment risk. Now, first of all, at the lower level of investment risk, you've got government stock. US treasuries are bonds issued by the US government. UK gilts are bonds issued by the UK government. And there are bunds issued in the Eurozone. All of these are means by which the governments of the US, the UK and Europe borrow money to fund their economy. And there is virtually no risk of you and not getting back your capital at the end of your investment period. And in the interim, you are paid a rate of interest, it's called a coupon, on that bond for the duration that you hold it. Now, the bond values do go down, and they do go up in relation to the current prevailing rate of interest in each of those various currencies, so dollar, sterling and the euro. So there is a degree of volatility, but it's within very narrow margins, generally speaking. And if you buy well, you can be certain of getting your capital back at the end of a period, and in the meantime, picking up a better rate of interest than you would on deposit. However, the rates on most of these bonds reflect the underlying interest rate in each of the economies. And with these interest rates still at very low levels, you're not really probably going to be outperforming inflation. So what one would normally do is determine how much cash should this particular client hold, both as a comfort zone to be able to default to in the event of the need to meet emergency expenditure, but also because one has an intrinsic sense of how much cash you should hold in your total wealth. And then moving on from there, you'd add on these government bonds or at the first level to provide an increase in return without an increase in risk. Then you might go on to corporate bonds, the same thing, companies, blue chip and less solid, less large companies, if you like, also borrow money in the market to fund their businesses in the same way governments borrow to fund the economy. But they, because there is a higher level of investment risk, not mega, but a higher level of investment risk, they pay a better level of return. In some corporate bond funds, you can achieve returns of 6% and 7% per annum. And you might even make some capital appreciation at the end of the bond period as well, and that's another step in the creation of a portfolio. And if there is still funds left that that you're prepared to invest within the equity market, of course you go to the blue chip markets of Europe, of the United States and of the UK, which gives you a real interest, a real investment in assets that actually go up in value over time, and which in the interim pay a dividend as well. And it's the balance of the proportions that you have in each of those asset classes, including cash, and perhaps bring into the equation, you know, your pension, your property ownership, to make sure that you're not taking an unnecessarily significant level of increased risk, but you are getting a disproportionately higher level of regular income as well as the potential for capital growth. And that's, I think, where most cash investors need to sit down with someone who is prepared to go through with you as an individual exactly what it is you have and what you would like to achieve, and then present to you, if you like, a solid menu choice of the things you might have in your ownership instead of cash, which will give you a much healthier long-term, medium and long-term level of return and an improvement in your income, and indeed in respect of your tax efficiency as well, if these things are properly structured.
Yeah, but there are so many shares out there to choose from, Bill. How does one decide which ones to buy?
Yeah, I think that's a very difficult conundrum. And Blevins Franks, of course, don't actually manage the money directly. What Blevins Franks skills have enabled us to do, and the size of the business has enabled us to do, is to use businesses like the Russell Group, who are a business that are out there analysing, researching and selecting the best asset managers in the world in each of their individual specialist categories. So they'll be out there interviewing and researching perhaps a man responsible for selecting American equities in the larger part of the American stock market, or the higher value part of the American stock market, the S&P 500, say. And they will analyse the best managers in that category extensively and then provide information to Blevins Franks as to which of the managers are operating in the S&P 500, for example, should be on the white list of choices of investment manager to look after the assets of our client. And they would be doing the same in the Japanese market, the European market, the UK market, in the market to do with bonds and other assets. And so when you eventually construct this brick-by-brick building of your portfolio with the assistance of an independent financial advisor from Blevins Franks, what you may find is that you've got what is a consolidated portfolio, but it may have as many as 25 or 30 individual fund managers within it operating in their own specialist niche markets to try and generate the best returns for you from each of those individual areas. And that, of course, gives you not just a market diversification, it also gives you a currency diversification to ensure you're not struggling around with one single currency.
Yeah, I think it's what you're saying about choosing funds and fund managers are really interesting, Bill. And of course, this is all about choosing equity funds. There's lots of aspects to consider here.
Yes, there are. And of course, the same selection process within Blevins Franks of the most appropriate fund manager is still carried out, whether it is in bonds, whether it is in corporate bonds, whether it is in cash funds. Even we look after cash assets, which produce a slightly better return, generally speaking, than cash on deposit, but also usually wrapped up in a tax planning framework, which means that you aren't able to or necessarily going to have to declare that level of modest income for tax purposes, whilst giving you a massive degree of investor protection as well, much more than you would get from a bank or a building society. So, you know, it isn't just about buying shares and buying bonds. It's about in what proportions do you buy them in relation to what you're trying to achieve, and how, having put it all together, can it be protected from unnecessary taxation? Of course, if there's some tax to pay, that's the way it is. But generally speaking, we're talking here about reducing the levels of income tax, the levels of capital gains tax, the levels of wealth tax, the levels of succession tax payable on the assets you've got, by properly setting them up within a framework that will deliver you a better gross return than you would otherwise have.
So for our listeners in Spain, Bill, do the same principles apply for investing in bonds?
Yeah, I think if you're going to invest in bonds, it depends at which level you wish to invest in. You know, if you invest in the bonds issued by the US government or the UK government, neither of those two areas have ever failed to repay investors, because they are state borrowers and you will get paid back on time. Now, you can invest in bonds in the smaller and emerging markets of the world, which pay a much higher level of return. Some of these small economies, as you would expect, just to quote a silly example, if you wanted to lend money through a government bond issued by the government, let's say Peru, you would probably want to get 10 or 12% on your money to make sure that you are being rewarded for the level of risk you're taking, because some of the South American economies have defaulted on bonds. And so, you know, getting the right mix of bonds is essential. But in the main, I would suggest, if you're looking to improve your long-term capital performance and at the same time getting the insurance policy, if you like, of a much higher yield, then I would go and look at corporate bonds, because corporate bonds, as I say, are borrowings made by corporations, by companies, Usually to grow their business, usually to make an acquisition, usually just simply to fund cash flow in the terms of business development. And if you have a very skillful manager researching with his the analysis behind the scenes, if you have him picking out those corporate bonds that he believes are well financed, where they have a good order book, you can be picking up 6 or 7% in income, and in some cases a little more. And at the same time, as those companies grow and increase in value, there are often opportunities to convert those bonds into the equity in the company. But very often the value of the bond itself will increase in value because the risk in the company has reduced. And so, you know, the same principles apply for investing in bonds. It's simply finding the best managers in the first place.
Yeah. And what other assets could people consider, Bill?
Well, I think properties sits right at the top of the other investment opportunity. But one of the issues you have to consider really is working out your wealth. And then the proportion of your wealth you've already got invested in property, which is the place in which you're probably living, and any second homes that you might have. And very often, although people consider property to be, you know, a rock solid investment that actually, you know, you could hardly lose your money, it just isn't true, I'm afraid. I mean, I can tell you that, for example, in, and you'll know this as well, Howard, that in areas of Spain and in France and in Portugal, the property prices that were prevalent back in 2005, 2006, when everything was going like a steam train upwards, following the global collapse, many properties are now worth less than they were 10 or 12 years ago. I know somebody I met just 2 weeks ago who had a property which was valued at 4.5 million euros in France in 2007, the beginning of 2007, and the property is currently on the market at 2.4 million euros, and they still haven't found a buyer after 3 years. So, you know, property isn't always the safe investment you think it to be, but nonetheless, it does form an important part of your portfolio. But outside of property, outside of cash, outside of government stock, outside of corporate bonds, outside of blue chip and smaller company equities and emerging market equities, I don't think you really need to look at any other assets. More of these esoteric assets on the market now than ever before, yeah. You know, venture capital funds and all the rest of it, but most people don't really understand them. Stick with the key mainstream investment choices for your portfolio, and you can make more than enough money without taking unnecessary risks.
Yeah, and I suppose that's what you say to clients, Bill, when you're helping to set them up there with their portfolio. But how much do you determine how much of each asset they should have?
It will depend upon what the client is trying to achieve, hoping that we can partner up the client's assets with the client's aspirations for capital growth and income with the client's tolerance to investment risk. And essentially, our key job is always to optimize the potential returns while minimizing the level of investment risk. And it's always better to come down the risk scale a bit and suffer a little on the performance side, because what you don't want is to have worked all your life to make a very good money and then find yourself laying awake at night worrying about your investments. If you're doing that, you're definitely over risked, and you should be reconsidering how you're invested. And the simple fact is that it takes expertise and skill from an independent financial advisor to sit down with you and work out quite how the proportions of your portfolio should be established to make sure that you end up with it, something that is absolutely tailor-made to fit you. I mean, we probably do have, because of the thousands of clients that we have as a firm, but Blevins Franks boasts itself on ensuring that every single client gets something that is tailor-made for them. There isn't we don't operate here's the investment, we have to squeeze what you want to make it work for you. We squeeze the investments into different shapes and sizes to fit what you're trying to achieve, if you see what I mean.
I do indeed. So how often do you review your clients' portfolios, and why is this so important?
Well, I think the investments overall are reviewed on a regular daily basis, but in terms of a face-to-face review with clients, to be perfectly honest, any significant review of less than 12 months really isn't long enough to be able to determine why and where and all the rest of it. You know, you need a period of time to leave the 12-month period, and then at the end of 12 months, sit down and say, well, how have we done? Why have we done this? What happened there? Because less time than that, you just really aren't allowing enough time for things to unfold. Because if you have it on a quarterly basis and in week 10 there's a drop of 2% in the value of your investments, you know, you may think the earth has just opened up and is about to swallow you, whereas in the following quarter it could go up by 5% and you've ended up, you know, making money. So it, I think 12 months is a reasonable period, and sometimes even 12 months is too short and depends on the state of the markets at that time. But I think most importantly, you need to be sure that if you've got a portfolio and there is a material change in your personal circumstances, a death in the family, a new grandchild, a decision to return to the UK, whatever it happens to be, that's the point at which you contact your Blevins Frankfurt advisor and ask him to come back and review where you are, because there's been a material change in what you had set up for in the first place.
Okay. So, Bill, many people are nervous about moving their savings out of the safety of cash into other investments. So how can you put their minds at risk?
I don't wish to sound facetious, and I certainly don't want to be provocative. I understand why people think cash is king and they feel happy and safe with it sitting in the bank, and they can go and look at their bank balance and they know that their notional value of capital is the same as it was 10 years ago. But the truth is it isn't. You can't spend the money on the same things because of inflation. You have been much more at risk in the last 10 years from holding cash than you would have been investing in a basket of bonds and equities, because they've gone up and up and up. Markets have been recently at historic highs and you've missed out on that opportunity. Well, don't go on missing it, because those investments that have made the growth over the last decade or so since the global collapse will continue over the longer term to increase in value, because they're real businesses. Is capitalism dead? Of course it isn't. Is it completely correct? No, of course it isn't. But the truth is, it is the area in which you can invest to make money. You can't invest to make money in cash. If you're looking to improve your capital values for yourself, your long-term retirement, your dependents, your beneficiaries, then you need to be looking and talking to someone from Blevins Frankfurt about how you can structure something that is more likely to make you money in the long term and to provide you with a long-term consistent level of income.
Yeah, and your website is a good place to start.
Yeah, there's lots of things on the website at www.blevinsfranks.com. You can look at lots of articles and even listen to these broadcasts again if you've missed something while making the tea. But importantly, all the offices and all the people who work within those offices are listed on those sites. They live and work in the area in which you live. Why don't you give them a ring and ask them for advice if you need it?
Many thanks, Bill. We'll talk to you in Spain again at the same time next week.
Thanks a lot, Howard. Take care and have a good week.